Brewers Publications, also known as BP, is the largest publisher of contemporary brewing literature for today's craft brewers, home brewers, and beer enthusiasts. With over 50 titles to choose from, there's a beer book to fill most needs. Whether you're just discovering beer or are a seasoned professional, BP is the go-to choice for brewers looking to expand their knowledge and hone their craft. Check out the complete BP catalog at brewerspublications.com. Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, January 12th, 2017. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, homebrewer Will Schumacher joins us to talk about his adventures in homebrewing in Switzerland and how he used forage spruce to create a tasty seasonal porter. If you're new to homebrewing or would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. And if you buy any of our DVD combos, you get a free basic brewing bottle opener. And don't forget to get a copy of our Brewer's Logbook. You can use it to log and track up to 50 batches of beer. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is Basic Brewing, all one word. We have a show page on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon shopping, go to our website first, basicbrewing.com. Click on the Amazon ad on the right-hand side of the page. It won't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site as well. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes, our Android app on Amazon.com. We have a Windows Phone app. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. We're on Google Play Music, and we're on the iHeartRadio app, too. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our virtual guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support, and thanks to everybody who's done so already. Let's take a quick jump into the mailbag. Tim writes, here's a question all the way from Denmark. You use a lot of carboys for 5, 3, and 1 gallon batches. How do you clean and sanitize them? I use buckets because I'm afraid of infection in the carboy. Well, Tim, buckets may seem easier to clean because you can reach right in there and scrub all the inside surfaces of the vessel, you know, by hand. But I find that carboys are easy to clean and sanitize, too. There are several products out there that are, you know, specifically designed to clean brewing gear, PBW and such. But I use automatic dishwasher powder. I rinse the carboy or jug with hot water first to get most of the gunk out. And then I put enough hot water in the container to dissolve a scoop of dishwasher powder, you know, a smaller amount for smaller vessels. But, you know, then I put it in there in the hot water and swirl it around until it's dissolved. And then I fill up the carboy, you know, up to the top with more hot water and just let it sit overnight. And the next day, I usually, for the 6.5 gallon carboy or the 5 gallon carboy, I usually take a carboy brush and scrub the sides. But, you know, I don't think it's technically necessary by that time. But after I do that, I drain out the soapy water and then rinse 2 or 3 times with fresh hot water. And by the end of it, the fermentation vessel is sparkly clean. And as for sanitization, I use iodophor solution. I just follow the label directions and measure the proper amount of iodophor to water. You know, more is not better. So mix the iodophor into the water to get the proper volume and concentration. So swirling a gallon or so of that in the carboy for a couple of minutes, you know, just making sure it gets contact time with all surfaces inside there, that's good enough. Works for me. So I find that using this technique even works for my 3 gallon plastic hardware store jug that you've seen on the video podcast that has the hollow handle where beer actually gets into and sits during fermentation. So I can't reach that with a brush, but soaking, you know, hot water with automatic dishwasher powder overnight is good enough to dissolve all the beer residue, even in that little handle. And I've used that container many times, and I haven't had any problems with, you know, off flavors or cross-contamination or anything like that. So That's my quick and easy solution. I'm sure that there are many other solutions out there, so to speak, literally solutions. But other than just picking, you know, having to pick up the heavy carboy with, you know, this full of water, you know, it's as easy to clean that as to clean a bucket. I got to brew this week. I brewed a batch of beer using locally made sorghum. And, you know, it's the molassesy looking stuff. Not the sorghum, the grain, you know, not like the sorghum. People use sorghum in gluten-free beers. But this is the actual stuff, you know, sorghum cane, and then they squeeze the juice out of it, and they cook it over a fire in a copper pan and concentrate it down to this delicious stuff that's good on pancakes and stuff. But I had a little more than a pound of that stuff, and I put it into a Belgian-inspired brew. The starting gravity was 1075, and the wort tasted great, and it smells awesome through the airlock. I used White Labs 500. Used to be called Trappist. Now it's a monastery ale yeast. And I did a 2-liter starter with that, and the fermentation started quickly. And boy, it just smells great. You walk into the little room, the little bathroom where I've got it working, and just, boy, it smells good. So I'm looking forward to trying that. And I also gave Steve a bottle of the sorghum, too, and he says he's going to brew a Belgian as well. So that will be a fun video podcast, I'm hoping and assuming. This is the second batch that I brewed with my Warthog EBC-130 electric brewery controller from our sponsors Desiree and Dave from High Gravity in Tulsa. And I really like it. It has more features than my original controller, which I also liked. It worked well. But this has a mash mode and a boil mode. And in the mash mode, as you're approaching your target temperature, the controller feathers the power level so it's less likely to overshoot. And it has an alarm that beeps at you when you hit your temperature that you set. And the boil mode features a digital readout that shows you exactly what percentage of power you're putting into the heating element, so that's handy. With the old controller, it had a knob on the side, and you kind of had to guess, you know, where you were power-wise, power level-wise. But so you can precisely control your boil with that. It has a timer as well that can be just a general-purpose timer, or it can shut off the heating element at a prescribed time. You can check out videos on the Warthog EBC-130 and the EBC-330 at youtube.com/highgravitybrew. The EBC-330 is designed for 3-vessel systems, while mine is great for brew in a bag, just a single vessel system. In the EBC-330 video, Desiree shows off their cool Herms system in their kitchen as she brews up a batch of beer. So again, find those videos at youtube.com/highgravitybrew. And find all of the electric brewing gear that you would ever want at the High Gravity website at highgravitybrew.com. And also search for High Gravity on GoFundMe.com to see how you can help Desiree and Dave move to a newer, larger, better location. Well, now let's talk to Will Schumacher about brewing with spruce in Switzerland. Will Schumacher, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thank you, James. It's an honor.
Well, you wrote me an email a little while back from Switzerland and talking about your spruce beers. And so this conversation or the topic of this conversation kind of hits some high notes with me. Brewing in a foreign land, or at least a land foreign to me, brewing with foraged ingredients, experimental brewing, and brewing with very small batches. So we got some stuff to talk about today.
Yeah, it's certainly been all of those. Yeah.
Now, you don't sound Swiss.
Thank you. I think. No, I'm not Swiss. I'm American. But I've spent significant time in Switzerland over the past few years as my wife has been teaching there. So during the school year, we spend as much time as possible in the Italian part of Switzerland.
It sounds rough.
It's hard duty. Somebody's got to do it.
Now, you know, growing up with American TV and American advertising, you know, the first thing that pops into my mind, you know, when someone says Swiss, is Swiss Miss Instant Cocoa. And I'm sure that there's better things to eat over there than that. What is Switzerland known for? Is Switzerland known for beer?
Well, parts of Switzerland are known for German Switzerland, is a lot like Bavaria in that way, I guess. But the commercial brewing has been dominated by pretty ordinary lagers for years and years. Not bad lagers, just pretty ordinary. Mm-hmm. But I say there's no real macro brew in Switzerland. The largest brewery is probably the size of, I don't know, Goose Island or something. In terms of output. So there's no Anheuser-Busch. But the Swiss are very, very Swiss are very locally oriented. They like to buy Swiss. So they like to buy local, and that means they like the local beer, whatever's produced. In places where they produce wine, some parts of around where we are in Italian Switzerland, they grow a lot of Merlot grapes, and they are fanatical about their Merlot wine, even though by international French standards, it's pretty ordinary stuff.
Yeah, they haven't seen the movie Sideways, I guess.
No. That one might actually be banned in Switzerland. But they do like local ingredients. They like local produce. There is beginning to be a little bit of a local craft brewing movement in Switzerland as well.
Is there much in the way of home brewing?
Not yet. There are a few transplanted expat Americans doing it much the way I have. I don't know any indigenous Swiss homebrewers yet.
Well, you might after this conversation.
Yeah, I hope so. There are lots of good reasons to do it, and a lot of interesting things you can do there that are very Swiss, very local, and tasty.
So give us some background on you as a homebrewer bringing into this conversation.
Yeah, I was just flipping back in my notebook, which is not a basic brewing journal, I have to confess.
We can fix that.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think the first batch that I wrote down, I think this is when I started writing my brews down, was in 2012, when I switched from a little bit of dabbling in extract to my first brew in a bag all grain batch. So I guess that, 4 and a half years, something like that, that I've been playing around with brewing.
Yeah, well, that's a good history.
And as I said, most of my brewing when I'm home in the States is sort of typical 5-gallon batches. I try to keep my equipment as lean as possible, so I brew in a bag. I've had good results with that. I probably could get greater efficiencies with a more conventional all-grain system, but I'm a home brewer. I'm not an efficiency expert.
I think I'm pretty happy with brew in a bag myself. So, if you do things like crush the grain aggressively, and right. Which you can do with a bag, you don't have to worry about a Stuck sparge, and then I find stirring the mash. Every few minutes, during the mash rest, I think that helps my efficiency as well. So
it does help, yeah.
Yeah, so it's nothing to be ashamed of with the brew in a bag brewing. It's great.
It is. I like it a lot. And in the end, you get beer.
Yeah, exactly. You don't have to tell people. You could tell people you have a brewing sculpture, and they never know. So how did you get into homebrewing over in Switzerland? What was how was your approach?
Well, maybe my wife would say I have a homebrewing problem. So I like to continue my hobby even when I don't have all of my equipment and my resources that I have at home. So when I was going to spend a couple of months in Switzerland, for me, that's a long time to go without brewing. So I thought, you know, I should be able to do this on the stovetop. I've seen James do this on Busy Brewing video. So I got a couple of pots, you know, for heating water and mashing in. And I got a big colander. I found that it works a little bit better if I line the colander with cheesecloth. It kind of slows the flow down a little bit. And away I went. Because the quantities are so small, I had to buy a new scale. You know, my hop quantities were sort of within the margin of error of my larger scale. So I bought a small scale, but that's the most expensive piece of equipment I bought, I think. And I found a place, this is very important, found a place where I could order homebrewing ingredients in quantities smaller than, you know, 50 kilo bags. So I found a shop that caters to craft breweries and home brewers in another part of Switzerland. So now I had a source for ingredients, and I had a stovetop full of little equipment, and decided to give it a try.
And what's your volume size or your batch volume size?
I shoot for 4 liters of finished brew from a batch. Sometimes it comes out a little less depending on the boil, I guess. But with a small batch like that, if I really want a more, I can do two of those back to back with the same equipment. That doesn't take very long.
Yeah.
So I can make a larger batch, but not much. I have a couple of 2 gallon fermenting buckets that I use for primary. And recently I've acquired one of these plastic, heavy plastic Spital fermenters. I haven't seen them in brew shops in the States that I've been in, but this was on the shelf in Switzerland, and I couldn't resist. It's very robustly built, it's ported, so it's easy enough to use for the primary fermentation. Hmm. That would actually hold a batch up to about 10 liters, I think.
So we're in the territory now where we have to translate from the metric into the American units.
Oh, right. Yeah. Batch is just over a gallon. I probably wind up with a gallon of beer from a batch. So that's sort of what I shoot for.
And then how do you package?
I bottle. Getting a beer bottles are pretty standard everywhere. If I'm careful about the commercial brews that I buy ones with labels that soak off easily and the little swing tops. So those work fine. I have a kind of an eclectic bunch of bottles that I've accumulated, but the capper works fine.
And you know, your home brewer, when you buy beer, according to how sticky the labels are.
Sticky the labels are. I probably gave myself away there, didn't I? Yeah, absolutely. Well, it makes a difference. I mean, I don't know what people are thinking when they use these, the permanent sealed on plastic that you can't even sandblast it off. They obviously don't want you to buy those bottles.
Yeah. My first bottles were Budweiser long neck bottles, you know, returnable bottles from a local bar. And man, those labels did not want to come off at all. And I don't know what they used to get them off at the brewery, but man, they're almost metallic. Then I made the mistake of making my own labels for my own beer and using spray mount to mount the labels on the bottles, and then that didn't want to come off. So
no, that doesn't want to come off at all. Actually, the best adhesive I've found for beer labels is a glue stick like you get in school. little white paste stick. It's very water soluble and easy to handle. It's a little less messy than milk, which also works, but it's just kind of messy.
Yeah, I also discovered that I would hold the label in my hand and then use the spray mount. And spray mount comes off of your hand. It's even more difficult to get spray mount off your hand than it is off a bottle. So
yeah, I'm sure the rest will come off eventually.
Yeah, I'm still, that was 20 years ago. I'm still finding pieces, between my knuckles, but,
yeah, I usually don't label, to be honest. I just use a Sharpie and mark the caps.
Yeah.
Yep. Or a grease pencil. I get a yellow grease pencil. I'm not concerned so much with fancy labels unless I'm giving it as a gift, but yeah, I just need to keep them separate so I don't open an IPA and get a barley wine by mistake.
Or you have to be a fancier with your codes than I am on the bottle caps, because I discovered that barley wine and Berliner Weiss, when you go by the initials, that's a problem.
I use different colors and I write it all down. Yep.
Well, if you do it right, I guess it doesn't stick around long enough for it to get confusing. But so when did you start looking around for, foraged ingredients or local ingredients for your beers?
Well, obviously, well, maybe it's not obvious, but for me, it's obvious that part of what makes me a home brewer is the desire to do it myself. And turns out that brewing is a process with lots of steps and stages and procedures and processes. So the more of those that I can do myself, the better I like it. Then I found out people put all kinds of stuff in. I'm a bit of a historian, and I learned that in the old days they didn't order from the friendly local homebrew shop. they had to get the ingredients a different way. And I've so I got interested in things you could put in that are not Reinheitsgebot compliant.
Well, you're in the Italian part, so
that's right. It never was in effect there anyway. And I think the Swiss were always a little bit chary about imperial law. So I was interested in that. And then I start thinking, okay, what kind of things could you forage? Well, you can forage the various kinds of foliage and herbs for Groot. And then I heard about a spruce beer. This is an interesting thing. One of the craft breweries in St. Louis, and I'm not going to say which one because I really like their beer, but I hated this one. Mm. 1 year they produced a spruce beer, and Buddy and I were there and decided to try it. He loved it. I just couldn't stand it. It was like taking a bite off your Christmas tree. And it was not balanced. It was kind of over the top and very aggressive in its spruceness. And they never made that again. I don't think it was my fault, but they didn't make it again. So that was kind of my first introduction to spruce beer. I thought, well, I guess you can use that in beer, but why would you want to? And then I saw an article someplace, probably in Brew Your Own or one of the other magazines, and where they were talking about using spruce as an ingredient. And the advice for this was all over the map. There were guys who said, be very careful, don't use too much, just a little bit to see if you like it, and then you can gradually increase. And there were other people who said, you're making something different, go for it, throw a bunch of it in. There were some that said, throw it in the mash and just mash with spruce. There were others that said, use it, make a tincture with vodka or something, and so you just extract the flavor without having the spruce actually in the beer. Well, anytime so-called experts in a article are all over the place with contrary recommendations, I think I get curious. So I thought, well, how would I do it as a really low-level, simple home brewer? And I think what I would do is I would cut branches off a spruce tree and throw them in the boil. sounded like the easiest way to do it. So that's what I tried. And I said, I don't want to overpower it like the bad commercial example I tried. On the other hand, I really want to taste the spruce. You don't want to have a spruce beer where you have to tell people that there's spruce in it.
Right.
So one of the reasons to brew a strange style like that is to get something different. So
how would you describe the spruce character, you know, and how was the one too much, and what were you looking for as the proper balance?
Well, the spruce character is that it is that wonderful evergreeny foresty, slightly musty aroma, and the aroma translates into a flavor that you'd get from a fresh cut Christmas tree that warms up in your living room after you put the decorations on it, you know. So I really did like that scent of spruce trees. What I didn't like in the one we had was that this didn't seem to be integrated in any way into the beer. It was a beer, and then there was a lot of spruce. So I wanted something that would integrate in. And when I thought about it, I said, okay, what I think I want is more of the aroma and less of the flavor. Now, if you want to do that with hops, you add your hops late, right?
Sure.
And then it doesn't matter so much if you have a lot of it, because you're not trying to go for the flavor. So the way I did it the first time was I threw in about 4 ounces of spruce branch, young branches, the kind of the last 4 or 5 inches of these branches that were cut off in, you know, late summer, really. Now, people will tell you that's not the optimum time to do it, but that's what I did. I didn't want sticks necessarily. I was really wanted the needles. Oh, I got the needles, by the way. And I threw this bunch of branches in the last 10 minutes of the boil.
Okay.
I wanted to sanitize it because, you know, birds perch on that.
and whatever else starts with P.
And whatever else there is. So you want to sanitize it, but I didn't want to necessarily boil all the sap out of the branches or anything. Boy, it turned out great. It took a couple of months for the flavors to all sort of gel together, but it turned out great. I did get a lot of needles because when you do this, one of the things that happens is that all the needles come off in about 30 seconds and they're floating all around in there. If you don't want to be picking spruce needles out of your equipment for the next couple of batches, do what I did the second time, and that is put it all in a hop bag to sort of contain things a little bit.
Is there any advantage to having the branch itself in there, or could you just strip the needles off?
Yeah, you could. I think you could strip the needles off. I mean, I'm a little bit lazy, and this sounds like extra work to me. Now, what I do get with the little twigs, you know, the tips of the branches, is you get a slight woodiness. Hmm. You probably get a little bit more campfire that you wouldn't have with just the needles. I think either way, it depends what you're looking for. I sort of like the sort of wild flavor of a little bit of the woodiness.
Hmm.
I think the needles by themselves would give you that evergreen aroma, but probably wouldn't have any of that woodiness. What I was afraid of is that it would somehow be bad for the head retention.
Mm.
You know, too much tar or tar and nicotine in the twigs.
Yeah, there's probably some oils in there.
There are probably some oils in there. But that didn't seem to be an issue.
Now I've tasted at least one beer that was bittered with spruce tips, just the tips of the branches. You know, and in fact, I've had at least one beer that had no hops at all because it was, you know, they just used the spruce tips instead of hops. Do you get a perceived bitterness? I mean, even though you're adding this at the last 10 minutes of the boil, do you get an added bitterness from the spruce?
No, I don't think so. But I can imagine how you could use spruce as an alternative to hops. I think the if I boiled it longer, you probably would, and then you really wouldn't want the woody part of the branch, I think. You'd get too much of that character. The spruce tips are the brand new growth, right? That comes out in the spring. Around here, April or early May, the last couple of inches of the spruce branches as it's starting to grow again after the winter. And they're really bright, light green, and they're not woody at all. If you just take that part, it doesn't really have a twig in it, so you wouldn't get that kind of unpleasant, sappy flavor. But those are so mild. Those spruce tips are so mild and light. I think you could probably collect those and sprinkle them on a salad. It's raw. They're delicious, but they don't taste very sprucey to me.
Interesting.
I did try using those in a batch once. And it just wasn't enough of the spruce character. It was very subtle and very delightful. But I think I'd rather use them in salad than in my beer.
Now, how much is there? Do you weigh these or just kind of eyeball? I mean, you're only talking about, 1 gallon of beer or 4 liters of beer. So
Yeah.
how much?
Well, the first batch I did was in the States, actually, and that was a 5 gallon batch, and I made and I used about 4 ounces of the spruce branches for 10 minutes. Now I use a big double handful. If it looks like too much, I probably throw it in anyway. But about 4 ounces in a 5 gallon batch for a I probably use for a 1 gallon batch, probably use, well, I have to convert now from grams to ounces. I'm probably using an ounce, maybe an ounce and a half,
An ounce is 28 grams.
20 grams. So I'm probably using 30 or 40 grams of spruce for a 1 gallon stovetop batch. That's not very much. It's certainly not deforesting Switzerland.
Yeah, whenever I think of people, harvesting spruce tips, I'm thinking, does that mean the tree is stunted now or what?
Well, it does mean that branch won't grow quite the same way this season.
But luckily, trees are tall, so,
Trees are tall, and there are lots of them, especially where people do spruce beer.
So what style of beer pairs well with the spruce flavor?
Thought about that a lot before I tried mine. It seems to me that the commercial version that I didn't like, I think that was based on an IPA because it was a light colored beer and it had hops in the background and then a lot of this spruce flavor, and that didn't suit me. I was looking for something that was more like what I think of as a Christmas beer, kind of dark and rich, and wound up settling on a robust porter as the base recipe. So the first 5 gallon batch, which I think turned out really well, had like 9 pounds of maris otter and a pound of chocolate malt. I think I used 12 ounces of Crystal, probably 120 Crystal, just to get it nice and dark. And bittered it and put in some flavor hops. I wrote down Styrian Goldings, and that's probably what I used. And then just threw in the spruce branches, kind of where you might do an aroma hop at the end. And then fermented with USO5.
And that one turned out pretty good.
Turned out really good. I will make it again.
But then the smaller batches,
In the smaller batches, yeah, the there, of course, you have to adapt a little bit to whatever. Well, in my case, I have to adapt to what I can get and what I have on hand. Most of the ingredients I need, I can get from this Swiss brew shop. I'm just gonna look up my recipe here.
I've got you sent it to me.
Yeah.
You want me to go ahead and read it off?
Yes, sure.
800, and I did some figuring here.
Oh, good for you.
800 grams or 1.76 pounds of pale ale malt, 250 grams or 8.8 ounces of dark Munich malt, 100 grams or 3.5 ounces of biscuit malt, and 50 grams or 1.76 ounces of black malt, mashing at 66 degrees Celsius or 150 Fahrenheit, a 60-minute boil, 9 grams of Styrian Goldings at 60 minutes, 4 grams of Styrian Goldings at 20, and then 50 grams of fresh-cut spruce branches at 10 minutes in the mesh bag, and then Safal US05. Original gravity 1061, final gravity 1007. So interesting. So how would you describe the character of that beer?
Well, it's a porter. It's discernibly a robust porter. The gravities that you wrote, that surprised me a little bit. It actually came out a little higher in alcohol than I thought. I don't know whether my system is just more efficient than I thought or what the deal was.
See, they're brewing a bag, you know.
And the so it attenuated nicely, but it's recognizably a porter in style. But before you take that first sip, you do get this lovely Christmas tree aroma. Mm. And it's discernible in the taste, but it's especially there in the aroma. It's around it. Unfortunately, I can't send you any because we drank it all. It doesn't take long with a 1 gallon batch.
Yeah, we're talking probably 8, maybe 10 beers.
I think I got 8 bottles out of that. A couple of half liter bottles, and the rest are the smaller ones.
Yeah. Well, that's. I mean. The good thing is that the bad thing is there's not a lot of beer, but the good thing is that, you know, you get to brew more often, you get to experiment with ingredients more, you know, and you can really tweak your recipes. I like to tell people that, you know, small batch brewing is kind of like having your own pilot brew house for your homebrew system. You know, you can do wacky things and, you know, with little risk of, you know, too much being invested. If things don't work out exactly right, you know, you don't have – you know, 2 cases of beer that you don't like.
That nobody likes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that can be a problem. The experimentation and the kind of adventure to sort of see what will happen. I mean, for me, that's the big attraction. It's one of the reasons I am a home brewer. If I just wanted to drink what is easy to get anyway, it's much less trouble probably less expensive if you count the equipment to just buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't. I want to do things that are hard to find, and you know, it's not easy to find a really tasty spruce beer.
I got some feedback. You know, we did an episode on roasting your own specialty malts. You know, or making own quote unquote crystal malts. And someone actually commented, "Why, you know, the crystal malt's cheap. Why would you want to go to all the trouble?" And you know, my response was, "Well, why would you want to make your own beer?
You know, beer's pretty cheap.
Why you can buy beer in the grocery store. Why would you want to make it?" So, I like the process. I like, you know, going through the trouble of doing this stuff and, you know, seeing what comes out the other side. That's the appeal. You know, nowadays, you know, back when I first started homebrewing, good beer was hard to find in Northwest Arkansas. And so, you know, now there's, you know, we've got plenty of good beer in Northwest Arkansas, and I still like to brew because I just like to brew. I like the process.
And, you know, homebrewers must be the best beer customers, because when you've tried to make something good, you realize what goes into making something good. And then when you taste a commercial beer that's really good, you're so appreciative because you say, "Wow, these guys really know what they're doing."
Yeah, on the other end, if a beer's not so good, you could sneak a beer past, you know, a beer novice. That maybe, you know, someone who's made some beers and maybe judged a couple of competitions, you know, they're going to be a little bit more skeptical of these things.
that's true.
You know, when you're selling buttered popcorn Pilsner, it's not a feature.
I call it Cineplex.
It's not a feature, it's a bug.
Right, right.
Well, what about, we are there any other local ingredients, local foraged ingredients that you find around there?
Well, Switzerland is pretty well known for its mushrooms. And come spring, when there are mushrooms about again, I'm planning to get out in the woods and see if I can find something edible. Now, the edible part is crucial here. Mm-hmm. You don't want to put any inedible mushrooms in your beer. In Switzerland, though, this is there's kind of a culture of mushrooms, and I am told from a reliable source that I can take foraged mushrooms to a pharmacy, and the pharmacist is qualified to identify and sort them out and tell me if they're hazardous or not.
Huh, I'll be darned.
Isn't that a nice service?
Yeah.
Wish we could do that here.
Yeah. I've done an episode on mushroom beers, and we've tasted, Steve and I tasted some delicious mushroom beers. But the brewer, and I'll have to go back in the archives. I can't remember his name. I can't remember my own name most days, but he did warn, you know, if you're going to go out foraging for mushrooms, find somebody who knows exactly what they're doing and has some credentials, you know, and you don't want to be just picking up any mushroom and eating it. That may be the last thing you do, unfortunately.
It might be the worst beer you ever made.
and the last beer
the last one.
But,
yeah, because just boiling is not going to remove all those toxins.
That's true, yeah. And so,
no, but the much less hazardous foraged ingredient in our part of Switzerland, southern Switzerland, is chestnuts. Hmm. A certain time of year in the fall, the paths and even the streets are just littered with chestnuts. And if you can beat the squirrels to them and gather up the chestnuts, those also work very nicely as a beer ingredient. It's supposed to be possible. I've never tasted one, but it's supposed to be possible to make a beer exclusively from chestnuts without any grain in it. Hmm. Because chestnuts are not like almonds or something. They're much lower in fat and much higher in starch than most nuts. Hmm. So supposedly you can do that. I don't think I would try that. I would probably roast the chestnuts and put them in the mash or in the boil. See if you can get some of that chestnutty sort of toasted nutty aroma and flavor. In a beer, might, you know, what would go good with that? A porter would be all right. Maybe an English brown ale would be a good base style for that. I'll let you know.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I've tried brewing with pecans. Once with was it pecans or walnuts? With my first stab at the fruitcake barley wine.
Yeah.
And I found that they just bobbed around on top of the boil, and I didn't think I got much nut character out of it. So I haven't done a lot of experimenting with it since then.
Did you toast them first?
Have to go back. I think I did. Well, I probably have to go back and look at my notes. But
you know, now that you mention it, I have used walnuts. I've used black walnuts, which grow just wild and are easy to find. Most people don't like to eat them. But for those, I think I made a tincture with alcohol, toasted them and chopped them up and put them in vodka probably, and then threw that into the secondary as a flavoring.
Now, I think it's a brewery, and maybe it's Lazy Magnolia down in Louisiana that does a pecan beer. I'll have to look that up.
That's a great name for a brewery.
Yeah, yeah. It brings some imagery up to mind right away.
Catches all the right notes.
Yeah, I love the smell of magnolia blooms. That's one of my favorite smells. That's a little bunny trail there. That's an extra knowledge there from the
no extra charge.
I have to say that if my voice is a little deeper this morning, it's because, you know, we're recording first thing in the morning, which is fine. But, you know, I tend to get, you know, more in the Johnny Cash range, you know, first thing in the morning with my first cup of coffee and all that. Hopefully I'm bright-minded enough that I asked all the right questions.
Well, you probably asked more questions than I had good answers for, because I'm not an expert in this. I just like playing with ideas in beer, and most of the time, you know, it's something I can drink. And if I've only got, you know, 8 or 10 bottles of it, it's not a hardship if it's just a learning process for the next time.
Well, I think, you know, if you know how to do something and you've had good results, that's certainly enough of a amount of knowledge to be called an expert in my book, at least in that one thing, you know. I know how to make this one beer. I'm an expert in this one beer. I think it's great. I admire your adventurous spirit, and I admire your tenacity in hanging on to your hobby, you know, even in a foreign land. And, you know, trying new things and trying the smaller batches and kind of literally going out on a limb to come up with something that you like.
It's too early in the morning for that, James.
You're branching out into new things. Stop needling me about my puns. I'll have to spruce them up later. It's as if Steve Wilkes is in the room.
Oh. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Next time I do a spruce beer, I'll send you a sample, and you can see what you think.
Yeah. I will take it. I would love to taste it. Well, Will, this has been fun, and safe travels going back and forth from St. Louis to Switzerland, and all the best for a prosperous and happy 2017.
Thank you, James, and the same to you. Happy brewing and a happy new year.
Thanks again to Will. As always, if you are foraging for ingredients, do your research to make sure that you're picking what you think you're picking, and make sure the ingredients that you're using aren't toxic in any way. Ray Sykes was our mushroom beer man, who brewed those very tasty mushroom beers. And we talked to Ray on the October 15th, 2015 episode. And Lazy Magnolia does brew a beer called Southern Pecan, not Southern Pecan. The pecan is what you have under the bed. Just a couple of clarifications there. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com, or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Check out our support link, where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcast. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. You get a free Basic Brewing bottle opener with any DVD combo, and you get and you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can find our logbooks, where you can track and log up to 50 batches of beer. Check all that out at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Featured products this week that were purchased through the link are 100% natural beard balm spiced sandalwood leave-in conditioner with natural oils for mustache grooming and beard growing. For men. That's good they have the clarification on there. And professional quality bypass pruning shears. Stainless steel hand pruner with sharp blades for comfortable trimming. I'm guessing those two don't go together, those two items. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.